Welcome to an inspiring episode of the Fail Forward podcast, where we have the pleasure of speaking with Gareth Dauncey, an architect turned mental health advocate. Gareth's transformative journey from corporate burnout to personal happiness led him to develop the Mood app, a powerful tool for tracking and improving mental health through the power of color. In our conversation, we discuss the tactics Gareth used to improve his own well-being, his journey in developing the app, and his own impactful podcast, How Are You Feeling Today? Join us as we explore Gareth Dauncey's story of resilience and self-discovery, and gain insights into enhancing mental well-being through technology and open conversations. Welcome to the Fail Forward podcast, where Dan and Adnan peel back the onion on our guest stories and on each other, all in an effort to change the narrative of failure. Enjoy the show. Okay, welcome everybody back to the Fail Forward show with Adnan and Dan. Today's guest, we have Gareth. Welcome, Gareth.
Hello, Dan and Adnan. Very nice to be here with you both this morning.
Yeah, Gareth, it's great to have you on. And quick bit about Gareth then. So we met very recently through a conversation, and something about Gareth that really stood out when I saw his profile. It was through LinkedIn. And Gareth, he's been an architect for a number of years. But more recently, he has gone into something that he feels very passionate about, and something we connected over was his mood and how he feels each day. And it's led him into creating an app. It's now started a podcast based around the feelings that people have each day. And a simple question with, how do you feel today? And the app can create a simple tap that can create your mood. It's very colorful, and we're going to dig into a bit more of that today. But Gareth, welcome along, and please could you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
I can talk a fair bit, so I'll try and give you the short version. And the short version is funny man, really sort of committed to that, I don't know, 20 odd years ago, and always wanted to make that the priority of my life. And because of that, we moved to the middle of nowhere in West Wales, because I wanted the kids to grow up somewhere safe and beautiful and free and close to nature. And as part of that, I became self-employed. So I used to work as an architect for other people, and then I worked for myself. And that's great in terms of sort of freeing yourself up in terms of time and that, or so you think. But what you actually do is never, ever switch off. And you're always worrying about the next job and all that kind of thing. And then what I kind of did was lose track of this idea of, you know, sort of being sort of time rich. And the more I sort of said yes to things, the more I could feel myself not being me. And then eventually that took me to a point where you kind of sleepwalked into this long, deep depression. And even though I'd had little sort of instances of that my whole life, this one was something else. And it lasted and lasted and lasted. I couldn't really see any way out of it. And eventually I went to something that my friend had done called Do Breakthrough. And it was a real sort of turning point, but I still didn't really know how to help myself. And there's not much help out there. And one of the things was you had to write this little letter to yourself that they would send back to you. In sort of 3 months' time. And you make this promise in front of other people, like 30 or 40 other people. And at the time, I didn't really care so much about myself, but I did still care about things like commitments to other people. And it was the kind of turning point that motivated me to actually do something about it. And I can't remember exactly what I wrote on it, but it was something like, you know, be kinder to yourself, get well, and stop working on so many crazy projects. And I sort of did that. So I had these things in my life that I was doing that I kind of started to wind down, but I still didn't know if I was getting any better. And then one day leading up to Christmas, I was in a local shop called W.H. Smith and bought calendar and colored pens, and they were just sitting on my desk, and none of this was conscious at all. There was no big plan here. And it was leading up to New Year's Eve. And I thought, I know, I'm just going to mark each day how I feel with each color. And I started to do that, and I started to see patterns emerge. And then COVID came along, and the whole picture changed completely. So work stopped, and pressure was also relieved overnight. And the funny thing was that the relief of pressure outweighed the worry about money and work. And I could see these patterns improving. And then the more I did that, the more I became self-aware. And then eventually I joined other groups with other people in lockdown, met other people who felt the same. And the funny thing was, a lot of people in these groups also felt that pressure relieved. I was very lucky. I was in a sparsely populated area. I was able to go outside a lot. I was living with my family. I started growing more vegetables, all that kind of thing. And it was just medicine. That's the only way I can put it. It was medicine. But in becoming more self-aware, this has taken about 4 or 5 years, mind, now, because now I'm probably as well, better than I've ever been. I'm so enthusiastic about life, and I just wake up every day and I can't wait to get on with the day, and it's great. But it's within a particular context that I've learned from becoming more self-aware. And I think we're all looking to try and be content and happy and looking outside, but I think one of the biggest things really is understanding yourself to create this kind of foundation that you can then build on and see things relative to. So really those patterns and those colors were a kind of baseline that I could see things relative to. And then because I met all the other people that were depressed, I thought, I don't want these people to end up like I did. And that's why I designed this little app, and I designed it in the background with a bit of encouragement from people I'd show my calendar to and some of my ideas, like mocked it up on the phone. And it was just a case of designing for myself at my worst, which was when you can't get out of bed. Being paranoid about people finding out, so privacy was a key thing. So, I don't know who downloads it, the date only exists on the phone, and getting a sense of perspective. So if you look at a picture, folks, you can only see brushstrokes, but you need to stand back to see context. So you can see a week, a month, and a year. You start to realize that actually things are not as bad as you think when you look back in hindsight. It's just you can't remember. Now that can sometimes motivate you to not catastrophize the future so much. And you can see I can talk about this endlessly. So that's probably enough of a picture for you to ask a few questions first. Otherwise, I could probably just talk for the full 45 minutes.
Gareth, I have many questions. For me, the first thing that I initially noticed from the moment you showed me the t-shirt with the shades of color, all the way to what you were talking about, was the beauty and the simplicity of what color means to mood. And how it gives you the ability, and at least this is at least the way I see it, is relative to journaling, or you've heard of a bullet journal, right? Or to putting a certain number associated with your value for the day. Color gives you two things. One, it gives you a level of nuance versus just magnitude. And two, it allows you to operate, yes, on the micro level of the day, but then step out and see the forest for the trees. And I'm curious to how you use that simplicity to look at your specific color data, not just in one way, like, hey, how is it today versus how is it tomorrow? But are there other ways you slice up the data? Like, what days are my shades lighter versus darker? Are there certain phases where I go into one color and then I switch to another? Like, just help me understand, like, with someone who's with the data, how do you actually do data analytics on color?
Well, when I initially started with the calendar, I used to do it a couple of times a day, and I used to write notes. And then I became so burdensome, especially whilst I'm feeling very well, that I just stopped doing it. So the whole thing was this idea of just doing it once a day with one tap. And it was informed a little bit by Tiny Habits. So BJ Fogg, and I know you talk about Atomic Habits as well and things like that. But that idea that if there's no motivation, the ability has to be off the scale. So it has to be as easy as possible. So I was very clear that the notification that comes up once a day is outside of the app.
Bring up for a second there.
Hello? I still see you.
Okay.
So, should I repeat the BJ Fogg bit? Yeah. Okay, so the idea of motivation and ability, if you can't get out of bed in the morning, the last thing you want is another 10 things to do. So when you talk about journaling and lots of things that people do to try and understand themselves. I was absolutely clear, because I was using myself as the kind of guinea pig. It had to be as easy as possible. And that's where that idea of one tap a day comes, and the prompt. So the prompt is the notification. You don't have to open the app, and then you tap it, and then it goes away. So when you want to look at the data, you see this beautiful picture. And the idea is, as well, by making it beautiful, you can get people to actually become not embarrassed by how they feel, and therefore possibly share these pictures. And if you can share them, you can change the conversation around it. And also, if you haven't got the words to ask for help, by taking the words away, you can show a picture to somebody, and maybe they can just say, well, what's going on? So you can open up those conversations. So when I showed you the t-shirt, the reason for showing you that was I wore it to the pub, showed it to a chap. He just said, what's that? I explained, and then he opened up about his girlfriend who was struggling. So it initiated that conversation, which was super cool. And the reason for telling you all that is just to lead into the how I use it, right? So I would start to see patterns relating to certain days, for instance. Like Monday is a typical thing that's bad for a lot of people. So what I used to do then was change Monday, because I was able to, from being self-employed, to having no particular obligations. And then because I would work my calendar, so later in the week, those obligations would happen. But by having a Monday which was free, I would still work, but there was no particular obligations. It meant that the weekend was better. And if the weekend was better, that fed back into Monday being better anyway, right? So it's just like kind of manipulating things to suit your own sort of biases and things like that. And then I would find other little patterns. Like I did this experiment where I didn't drink for a month. And I compared a really easy month last August without hardly any stress in my life. And the sun was out and I was going swimming every day in the sea. But I was drinking every night, not a lot, but just, you know, a couple of pints. And then the month after, in September, I had a lot of kind of things that took me way out of my comfort zone, public speaking about myself and depression, and on quite big stages sometimes as well. And I didn't drink that month. And then I did a post on LinkedIn about it, like just compare these two pictures. And the month of not drinking with stress was much lighter than the month of enjoying myself with beer. And it was bizarre. And so really, it was little experiments and then gaining those insights by making comparisons. And then what I found then is that you see cycles over different timescales as well. Like, for instance, winter is often a tricky time for some people. But in responding to those cycles and making changes, you then see those patterns over time change. So it's the lightest of touches to become able to understand yourself. But it's not like taking a pill or a quick fix. You have to be invested in it. And that moment each day of tapping is a point of reflection when you think of the day. So, you know, there's highs and lows, but I always try to think of it as, but what's that day been like generally? How have I felt generally through that day? And then now I'm very well. I've got this very consistent picture with just the odd thing, you know, if I haven't slept well or whatever it is. And I treat it now like the idea of an early warning system. So I'm now not so keen, or I'm not so sort of fixated on the bigger pictures, even though it's pretty cool to see this because it's so light that my entire thing's got up lots over a year and a half of using it. But when I look at the week view now, if I see a day or two getting darker, I know to basically take my foot off the pedal, spend more time in the garden, more time with family. And because I've learned it, because I've seen it happen so many times, it turns around. And the more I do it, quicker it turns around. So I don't feel so at the mercy of, do you know what I mean? I feel like I'm more in control of my own mental health. Whereas before, I used to feel like I was just, you know, boat on the sea, and whichever way the wind is going or the waves, it's just completely out of my control. And I've learned that it's not actually like that, and you can do so much for yourself. So it's about empowering an individual with a simple, simple tool.
So I think I definitely have a couple of follow-up questions, but the beauty of it is you actually answered most of them as I was thinking about them through that conversation, which is incredible. A lot of people can implement changes in their life, or at least feel like that they have the ability to implement changes to improve their lives. Has having this data on color made it more easier to maintain these changes? Has it made it easier to move from, you know, previous state to now state and then maintain it? Like that's what I'm curious, because the actual success rate of a major change, be it working out or eating healthy or, I don't know, going for a walk with the family in the morning, yeah, it works for 20, 30 days, and then you go back to your normal ways.
Yeah. I'm so committed to not becoming a burden to my family ever again that, and also I don't want to ever feel like I felt, because it's awful. You know, if anyone's experienced it, it's really hard to describe, but I sort of use words a bit like an existential loneliness, as if you're like a spaceman or an umbilical cord looking back. And I haven't felt like that for a long time. And even though I can still sort of relate to that, somebody said to me recently, it's a bit like having a shadow. It's not you, but you're still aware that that shadow's there. And I don't really want to feed that in any way. So I'm absolutely committed to taking what I've learned, and I've changed my life completely. So I live within a pretty structured way now, whereas I never used to. I'm set boundaries with things, which I never used to. I don't feel I've got to please everybody, which I used to. And it doesn't mean it's selfish at all. It's just, I mean, this sounds cliched, but I've heard it so many times now about putting your own oxygen mask on first. And that idea of, if I'm not well, I'm not good to anybody anyway. So I've just learned how to live in a way. And a lot of that is doing less, actually, which is why I describe myself as a tortoise, not a hare, because I'm very aware that I'm not going to be solving a million problems. I've kind of like funneled down into one. And that one, I worked out that it could, a way that is almost foolproof to help me. And then I realized, actually, there's a lot of people like me. And then I realized, actually, there's a common thread to most of us, but like my wife would never need something like this. Like our friends who would never need something like this. But if you do, I think you could often make the thing worse by over-obsessing and becoming so detailed in your analysis of things that you create a different anxiety. Which is why I didn't even want you to have to open the app to make the entry. So, you know, this idea of mindfulness and being in the moment, when you make your entry today, it is a little moment of mindfulness where you're sort of in the moment and you're considering the day, but you consider how you feel in that moment and why. And that's part of what builds the self-awareness as well, not just the picture. It's because you're literally out, and this little notification that comes up and it just says, how do you feel today? And the funny thing was, when I was beta testing it, quite a few people said they felt they had this kind of non-judgmental friend just checking in on them once a day. And most of those people didn't like notifications on their phone, but they would say, this is the only one I allow, because it's so discreet and general. And it doesn't ask anything of you. It just asks you to tap a shade, one of five shades. That's it.
Oh, man. Oh, Gareth, that's another area I'd like to delve into, because you spoke about an understanding about user interface and customer willingness to convert into an action within an app. You've mentioned that you're an architect. You've kind of alluded to the fact that you are essentially a self coach and psychologist. But what you've said between the lines is that you're also either a developer or a product manager at the least. Talk to me a little bit about the process of developing the app and, you know, getting into the technology world and thinking through, you know, how does a consumer interact with an interface? What is the backend technology? And how did that translate into, you know, how you showed the customer something, right? Because you could have totally done it as a Google Docs, but you decided it the way to do it, the way you decided to do it the way you specifically wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing is, I think the most design is very similar. and most creative acts are quite similar. So I think we're all capable of applying ourselves many different things. And whatever your kind of core way of thinking is, will come through in those different outlets. So whether it's music, writing, whatever. And as an architect, I really like the idea of, and this isn't good for you actually, but if you've got a busy brain, one of the things that does allow you to do is to take all these disparate things and to bring them together in a way where you can bring a hierarchy to it, you can boil it down to its essence, and you can, you know, when you hit the nail on the head, because it always seems like an inevitable answer that everyone will say, of course it's like that. I could have done that. But they can't. And I try to do that with buildings. I can't play the guitar very well, but I've got a guitar and a piano and a drum kit and all these different things. But you should still be able, within your capabilities, to know what you're trying to achieve. And sometimes not having the language or the vocabulary to do something, I'd find is actually quite a good thing, because the possibilities then are limited as well. But that essential thing can still come through. And a lot of the music I like is sort of like that. It's not sophisticated in a conventional way, like classical music, for instance, but it's sophisticated in its own way. So that's a long-winded way of saying that I'd already drawn this up, exactly how each screen would be, and the language, the idea of see how you feel, you know, all these phrases, the flavor of it, all of it. I'd kind of worked out all paper first. And it's weird because I'm a big believer in felt tip pens and tracing paper, because a lot of times people use a computer to articulate an idea and it seems finished at the first stab, just because the language is so convincing and the way it's portrayed. But the idea of tracing paper and a pen means that, bang, throw that, next one, trace over the top, next one, trace that, next one. And you, what happens then is that you go through all these iterations very quickly like this, because the media isn't as convincing. And I even start off with a thick pen, because a thick pen is more blunt in terms of how you can articulate a line. And then as I get closer to something, I use a thinner pen, and then I put it on the computer. And that's with whatever I'm doing. So that could be anything. So I'm not sure if that answers your question, but basically I'm trying to say that I don't think you have to be an expert in something. And sometimes I think if you are, that can actually make the thing not as potent as it should be, because you're already predisposed to languages and the ways people already do things within that discipline. So I think coming from the outside in and knowing exactly what my problem was, the idea of loving things boiled down like a sous chef making a sauce, you know, all of that kind of thing, I think is why it's the way it is.
I was going to suggest something there as well. Like you just said about a chef making a sauce, their love of cooking and their love of making food, and that's their the thing they live in. And for you, Gareth, I just see this as pure passion, fun. This conversation, the conversation we had before, you're always smiling, and I just have so much energy from you, just in the way you describe what you're creating and this commitment to be able to help other people based on how you felt. And it's incredible. I'm loving listening to you talk about this, you know, product that you created, and this the way you create the system based on your mind, you know, this architectural mind and systems that you create, and just bring it out through color. Can I ask this question? Are you dyslexic by any chance?
No, but sometimes I have to read a text or an email many, many times before I'm happy with it. And sometimes I ask my wife to look at it. And on different days, words can just flow if I'm typing them, and other times I have to play with them quite a lot. So I don't just send things willy-nilly, because, yeah, but I don't know. I'm not dyslexic, but then sometimes things do look strange. And then I think we've all got different facets of different things that get amplified in different ways. You know, this thing about not being able to stop thinking. So it's weird. I've read so many things about self-help, religion, philosophy, all of it. And I think I said when we chatted the other day that you could boil most of it down to one or two pages of A4. But the bizarre thing is I didn't really know any of that stuff properly, or I certainly haven't lived it. And now I do. And it's almost as if mood came out of that knowledge, but it didn't. What that knowledge has done is validate the thing I instinctively was drawn towards. So I did this excellent course with friends really on something called We Are Hummingbird Health, and they've mental health first aid trainers. And it was fantastic because I'd never really studied this stuff properly before that they teach about mental health, and not in a structured way. And everything they said, the thing about the mental health continuum, I mean, it's a perfect tool for that. We've got this middle ground, the middle tone, and you've got positive mental health and negative mental health. I mean, that's also got diagnosed or not diagnosed as a vertical line as well. And that line in both directions, that cross, is thick to represent stigma. And that's why people don't tend to go from one quadrant to the other. But sorry, I could talk about this all day. But the thing was that I felt like I was on such solid ground afterwards, and nothing had changed with mood. It was just that the way I designed it and thought of it works. And learning all this stuff later, it's as if it's kind of reverse engineered in some way, because it just fits. And I think it's because of that simplicity. And I think it came out because it came out of a lived experience where I was just done. You know, I was gone. And for me to get better, the thing had to be as simple as possible for the reasons I described, and give you that sense of perspective, and be completely private. So it's anonymous when you download it. The data's only on a phone. So those things that were important to me, because I was ill and could articulate it, I think that's why it came out the way it was. And now I learned so much more, I can see that actually it fits well within, you know, sort of conventional theories of mental health.
So the reason I asked about dyslexia is I'm dyslexic, and my son is also going through a stage of being assessed for his dyslexia as well. So this neurodiversity and emotional intelligence that he struggles with. And for me, I'm a very, very visual person. And this system that you've created, I get excited about, because I just see this world where, imagine every school in the world had this app. Not just my son, who's struggles with dyslexia, and he's finding it hard to explain his emotions, but we're working on it, and he's getting much better, I think, as well. But every morning, as people turn up for school, they just tap and explain their mood. And we did this experiment, say, for a year. And at the end of the year, all the teachers could review, you know, the students based on their learning needs and, you know, how they feel, you know, their mental health. So it's almost stepping out of the education part of, you know, how schools set up, but just focusing on their well-being and how well they feel. This would be incredible. I mean, is that anything you've explored, or how would you feel about that, you know, based on the data you're trying to keep private, and it's, you know, a tool for each individual?
That's the thing. I think I've got so many different ideas about all of this, which is why it's tricky to know which direction to go in, right? But I think what it is, it's about whatever institution or organization not being from the top down. So it's from buy-in from the bottom up. So if it's a school, if it's a business, if it's a group of friends, whatever it is, I think it has to come from the point of view that the individual wants to do that rather than a forced thing. So if that fitted, say, a sports team or a pilot in school or anything, I think it's completely fine as long as the buy-in is from the bottom and it's not imposed from the top. And that's the whole thing. It's about empowering individuals and for them to feel it's okay to share if they want to. Or it's a tool for them to ask for help, or it's a tool for them to become self-aware. And I love the idea of it becoming a bigger impact. But I completely understand what it's like to be the little guy that can't talk to anybody about any of this stuff. And now I can't stop talking about it because it seems to be helpful to people. But I do think it's got to come from the bottom up, not the top down.
Is there... I'm not really sure how to ask this question, but I'm just thinking through at least what it might sound like. Do you consider in your own self and in the people that use your app the time of day that the feeling is recorded?
Yeah.
Do you get different completely. Things?
So you can set... Oh, sorry, Emma.
No. Go ahead.
That's a very individual thing. So some people, for instance, like I intend to do it, especially when I wasn't so well. I do it in the evening because I would reflect on the day. And the part of the reason for that was mornings were always a struggle for me, which and the day would get better. So I used to be this kind of guy that just couldn't get out of bed. You know, just happy to stay there. And the more you stay there, the more you mull things over, the more you procrastinate. And it's like a vicious circle down. So for me to have done it in the morning wouldn't be representative of the whole day. So I always used to do it in the evening because things always got better throughout the day. And I would feel like I could actually be more objective about the day. So therefore, it was a closer representation to the day. And the day is what I was interested in. But then people, for instance, who wanted to see that specific thing about the morning, so maybe they would find out. And maybe it would make sense, actually, to do the opposite of what I've just said. And you're trying to log the how you were doing with mornings, for instance. So, and there's people say, you know, I know people who drink too much or have problems with menopause or whatever it is. So I think it's also a tool that doesn't have to be as general. And you could use it in relation to say, something. So say, like when Dan was talking about the running club and all of that, when somebody, I know a lot of times things like that have started and they flourish because it's actually about the group and the community that gets built. And therefore, often people who are lonely join a group and that just happens to be the media. Now, if somebody was feeling like that and then joined a group, it'd be interesting to see over time how they started to feel as a consequence of that specifically. So like I told you about the month of me drinking and the month not drinking, that was a very specific thing I was looking at. And I learned something about myself and then I moved on to the next specific thing I wanted to learn about. But so I don't take the picture either as sacrosanct as it is, because often I'm using it in different ways. And that's the thing, I'm not trying to hold on to the past either. It's just a marker. And what I'm interested in is how I'm moving forward, actually. But what's really cool is when I see the last 3 months, which are a hell of a lot lighter than anything in the past, it's encouraging to see that on the year scale. So I see this light thing at the top and all this darker stuff before, and it just encouraged me to keep doing what I'm doing.
What does light you up, Gareth?
Family, friends, and being outdoors as much as I possibly can, whether that's in the garden growing stuff or in the sea. Do you know what? This is so strange because I hated talking about myself my entire life. And I certainly would never have talked about depression. Tell my friend David, who I go in the sea with, the two lectures chap I mentioned, encouraged me too gently for a long time. So I've got him to thank for a lot of this. And he keeps encouraging me as well. But therefore, I would do anything to help him. Well, I always would anyway. So I do all the architecture for them. It's great. And actually, the two lectures this year, I'll be doing a farm tour of the buildings we've done up there. Why? Which is cool. So, sorry, Dan, I forgot what you are. Oh, yeah, light me up. Right. So it's really odd because I would have thought that I would hate this, but I love talking to people. And I love doing the podcast. And I love hearing people open up about themselves. Maybe often that actually helps them because they talk about something that they aren't wanted to and they feel a bit of a release as a consequence of it. And then the thought of somebody else listening to that, feeling not quite so alone, it's just fab. And I'm not doing any of this to feel good as a consequence of other people feeling better. I sort of feel duty bound to do that. but it is encouraging when you hear that. So it sort of puts wind in your sails, kind of thing. And I just simply don't want people to end up like I ended up. And I'm not starting to say I was special or anything either. I'm not seeing a universal problem. And I think a lot of it is to do with the way we live in the West, where we're constantly aspiring to things and looking out for happiness instead of actually learning that most of it you've already got and it's inside.
So Gareth, I want to ask one final question, and it's actually not the game. It's something entirely different. My initial thought was I would just ask you to just describe all of the colors and what they mean, but I think there's a more interesting opportunity that showcases that, but also uses what you do to maybe even paint a light on us as co-hosts. I'm curious, can you or would you be able to pick a color or certain colors to describe me and Dan? I'd be curious what the colors mean and then why you chose them. And we'll do the same for you.
Okay.
And we don't get offended easily, so don't worry.
No, well, it's a tricky question because it's actually about the shade of each color. So the lighter your mood, the lighter the shade, right? So you've got five colors to pick from. And I change the color I look at all the time, depending on how I feel. And the reason I came up with those colors is that I wanted two which were kind of energizing, which is the red and the yellow, or orange, and two which was kind of calming, which was the blue and the green. And this is the strange way my mind works as well. I thought if you combined, you've got three primary colors there, red, yellow, and blue. And if you combine yellow and blue, you get green. I don't know why that meant something to me, but this is what I was telling you about the way you sort of think. And the reason gray is in there as a monochrome is that I had a friend that at the time wouldn't do this if it was in color because he was pretty dumb. And he also wouldn't chart how he felt for his doctor. And so he was on medication and things. And it turns out that you need that in there because if someone's colorblind, but the point is that those shades are universal. So whichever color you look at, and you can change the color whenever you want, the picture is exactly the same and readable because the tonal range is the same within each of those colors. So all I could do is say to you, you both strike me as very light. And I would say probably the second from the top. So if you've got five, if you've got the middle range and then two lighter and two darker beneath that, I'd say you both spring me today as being one up from the middle, which is great because, you know, you'd have to be euphoric to be at the top. And that's, you know, you want, that's occasional, the same as the bottom is occasional, hopefully. And color-wise, I don't know. I mean, you've both got a lot of good energy. You're both smiling loads. You seem, red would be a bit too potent because you're not, I'd say you're in the kind of nice orange range. So second from the top, orange. And I would put myself probably in the blue, second from the top, just because I've been in the sea this morning. And as I said to you, I saw some dolphins and a seal. And I just love, I don't know, I love the association with water.
I would love, if I had a choice, I was thinking about this as you were talking then, I think I'd like to see myself in the shade of blue. And I think I try to be, and this is what I'm trying to emulate, is this calm presence. Any situation, just the things I want to be remembered for is ultimately to be that kind person that everyone remembers. So kindness is really, really important to me. But to be kind, you need to be calm, I think, as well, in any situation. So you're not stressing out and you're taking your time to make the right choice and decisions as well. So I've always been quite a positive, optimistic, kind of sunshine yellow, and that's where the orange I think I would see myself in a lot of the time. But I think that kind of blue color, that's where I'm striving to be.
And I love the orange because I definitely might see myself closer to a red person, and the red is definitely everyone's laughing. It's like, yeah, we saw that. But yes, very passionate of a person. And honestly, can come off as intense to some, but that's where I swim, and that's where I enjoy swimming.
No, but that's interesting because your personality, I think, if you did the personality color test, you are very red. You're very analytical. You're very driven. You're passionate, and that kind of red is where you fit in, I think, Adnan, anyway. Whereas for me, it's the yellow, the sunshine, everything's good and great and groovy. But yeah, I know what you mean.
But the funny thing is, depending on how I feel, I'll change the colour. So sometimes I can't look at red, but then other times I want to see it in red. It's bizarre. It's a really personal thing that changes.
And I agree with that as well. I want to be more action orientated and driven like Adnan as well. So I need more red as well, just to be able to take, you know, get on with things and get things done like Adnan.
And I need a lot of blue. I definitely need to slow down.
And that's why this works so well.
Gareth, I think you're all, like, my assessment of you as well. I would put you in the blue, maybe with a tad bit of orange here and there, but I would put you at the top rung of the ladder in the color, because as soon as you came in, that smile and the, I felt like you were very comfortable in your shoes when you even came on the pod, and that made me feel very comfortable to just say what's up and crack a joke, you know? You didn't create an anxious atmosphere, which is not easy to do for most.
No, thank you. I felt the same, actually. And we'd never met before, Adnan, so, you know, that's testimony to it.
Yeah, I just want to say as well, before we look at finishing off very soon, that you're a person, Gareth, that I want to spend more time with. I think your presence, the fact that you're trying to help, not necessarily so many people, but just, you know, if you can help a few people, I think you said before, that makes you ultimately feel better. I think your drive for connection, having been in such a lonely place, means that you've got this drive and this why now to be able to help people. And I think I've found myself in that place as well. And it's why I love doing this podcast so much, just to be able to meet people like you. Just, you know, we get this feeling, Adnan and I say all the time after the episode, we're like, wow, just that feeling of we've really met someone interesting. And I just hope the listeners, you know, feel that from the conversations we have, you know, from the run clubs Adnan and I have started, to be able to give people opportunity to just say how they're feeling. You know, when we have a coffee after a run, it's not necessarily the running, that's just the movement, that's, you know, to stay well, but it's the people have the opportunity to open up and tell people how they feel. And anything you can do, you know, anyone out there that can create those opportunities, be it, you know, the color app, the t-shirt, I think that's an incredible thing, just for people to have the opportunity to show how they feel, open up a conversation. You know, I had this vision of the run club, people get 5 different colors to choose from that they get for free.
You know, and
they can turn up, they...
Sorry. You're making me think. I'm going to send a little flyer, right? And it'll have a code on it for 90 days. And if the only reason it's 90 days is that's all I can do with Android. And I can't be prejudiced between Apple and Android. And if anybody in your club wanted to give it a go, afterwards, what would be so interesting as time went on would be to see if the run club for new people had kind of changed how they felt over time. And afterwards, you could just show each other your phone. You know, this is how the last week has been. This is what the last month looks like.
That's incredible, dude. Honestly, the thing I'm finding most when people join the run club as well is that terror. Because it's normally mums and dads that turn up. They often say, I don't know why I'm here. I just feel like I've got this urge to meet people and, you know, in the community. And then gradually as they get through week by week, they just open up and they meet new friends and they just say, you know, this running club or joining this running club, it's not that I feel like I'm a runner, but I just feel accepted and heard. And yeah, 100%, it'd be so interesting to see that.
Brilliant. I'm really tough we met, and it's bizarre, isn't it? We've got LinkedIn to thank for it, and the fact that we've all kind of posted in an open way.
Serendipity.
Is that people gravitate to you and you gravitate to other people, and it's happening more and more.
You're a magnet for conversations like this. I think that's what it is, Gareth. Anything you put out there into the world, you'll get back through, you know, connections like we relate to. You know, we're all on the same page, I think. We're all trying to, yeah, put messages out to the world to make the world a better place. And I think the more you keep doing that, the more you'll keep having conversations like this and keep helping people.
No, it's great. Thanks. And thanks for having me. It's been a treat. And definitely, both come on separately. On to how do you feel today?
Would love to.
Count we'll have a resolution.
Before we let you go, How can people download the app or get to the webpage?
Oh, right. Okay. The easiest thing, because they won't find it on either sort of App Store or Play Store, would be to go to the website, which is moodapp.io. Or if anybody, you know, I was trying to describe how I use it, but I post an awful lot about it. So if anyone just looked up Gareth Dauncey, Dauncey, on LinkedIn, then they'd be saturated with information about it, because I post about it an awful lot. Or on Instagram, the handle is at moodapp.io, and the podcast is at howdoyoufeeltoday.podcast.
I love it. And Gareth, and just for the listeners, in the span of time that Gareth was telling me how to download the app, I went to the website, I downloaded the app, and I'm already putting in a color for my mood. It's that simple.
Brilliant. One tap a day.
One tap a day. Awesome. Fabulous. And I am now subscribed to the Mood app.
Absolutely legendary. Yeah. Just like that.
Boom.
Oh, well done. Brilliant.
And Gareth, one final thing to leave you with before we go. Can you believe you went through a whole episode without mentioning tomatoes?
The funny thing is, I sent my friend a photograph this morning, or two friends a photograph of tomatoes this morning already, just before coming on here. That's the funny thing, isn't it? I've actually got an Instagram account, which is at Close Up Veg as well, where I just take photographs of beautiful flowers and that, where before they turn into beans and things. One of my good friends, Alex, is getting growing stuff now as well, and the more you do that, the more you know, I could talk about that all day. You just feel part of a bigger whole. And there's so many good things about it. It's so good for you in every way.
I see that was going to be the answer to what lights you up. Because that reaction we just saw then, that really is what lights you up as well. Just to be able to grow things and spend time in the garden. Because I think that's so therapeutic.
But there was such a funny thing. I wrote a comment once on something, and then this other friend keeps reminding me of it. And it was as simple. What's life about? It's as simple as this. It was just grow tomatoes and help people. And that was it. And he keeps reminding me of it.
Yeah. Absolutely love it. Gareth, thank you again. Look forward to spending more time with you. Thanks for your time today. And have a great day.
Yeah. And you, it's been a real treat. Thanks.
Thanks for listening. Leave us a review. Tell us what you think. Find us at Instagram, failforward.pod. If you know someone who wants to be on the show, or if you want to be on the show, give us a shout, DM us, and we'll see you soon.